Good afternoon, good morning, wherever you are. It is Michael Gustin here, and we are live with the next episode and installment of the Manifestillionaire podcast. I'm super glad you could join me today. I appreciate the time you spend investing in yourself by listening to this, and the messages and the audios that I get from you guys are just awesome and awesome and awesome to hear. Just a little bit of housekeeping. We're going to be changing the name of the podcast. I believe this isn't set in stone, but it's something I've been thinking about. Just personal preference on how I feel about it. But for now, we're still Manifestillionaires. So if you're a Manifestillionaire, go ahead and share this with your friends, with your family, with the people that need to hear it. So today, we're going to get started. We're actually going to be skipping around a little bit and reading a chapter out of another one of Neville's books, and it's called Out of This World, Thinking Fourth Dimensionally. One of my favorite books. You know, Neville is a master at advising us on how to see things from the perspective of who we really are, which is infinite, which is limitless. And if you pay attention, and if you choose to dive into this, and really test it and see if it is true, I can guarantee you, you'll see that life turns into one of the most magical interconnected experiences you never thought it could be. The last couple of weeks, as you know, have just been insane for me, but I'm super grateful coming out of the other side through death, through loss, through transition, because it only reaffirms to me again that imagination is the true reality, and the events of the world are shadows of past imaginings. So without further ado, let's get started. Chapter 1 of Out of This World, Thinking Fourth Dimensionally by Neville. Chapter 1, Out of This World. And now I have told you before it comes to pass that when it has come to pass, you might believe. John chapter 14 and verse 29. Many persons, including myself, have observed events before they have occurred. This means that before they occurred in the world of three dimensions. Since man can observe an event before it occurs in the three dimensions of space, life on Earth must proceed according to plan. And this plan must exist elsewhere in another dimension and be slowly moving through our space. If the occurring events were not in this world when they were observed, then, to be perfectly logical, they must have been out of this world. And whatever is there to be seen before it occurs here must be predetermined from the point of view of man awake in a three-dimensional world. Thus, the question comes to mind, are we able to alter our future? My object in writing these pages is to indicate possibilities inherent in man to show that man can alter his future, but thus altered, it forms again a deterministic sequence starting from the point of interference, a future that will be consistent with the alteration. The most remarkable feature of man's future is its flexibility. It is determined by his attitudes rather than by his acts. The cornerstone on which all things are based is man's concept of himself. He acts as he does, and he has the experiences that he has because his concept of himself is what it is, and for no other reason. If he had a different concept of himself, he would act differently. A change of concept of self automatically alters the future, and a change in any term of his future, series of experiences, reciprocally, alters his concept of self. Man's assumption, which he regards as insignificant, produces effects that are considerable. Therefore, man should revise his estimate of an assumption and recognize its creative power. All changes take place in consciousness. The future, although prepared in every detail in advance, has several outcomes. At every moment of our lives, we have before us the choice of which of several futures we will choose. There are two actual outlooks on the world possessed by everyone: a natural focus and a spiritual focus. The ancient teachers called the one the carnal mind and the other the mind of Christ. We may differentiate them as ordinary waking consciousness governed by our senses and a controlled imagination governed by desire. We recognize these two distinct centers of thought in the statement, "The natural man receives not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him. Neither can he know them, for they are spiritually discerned." The natural view confines reality to the moment called now. To the natural view, the past and the future are purely imaginary. The spiritual view, on the other hand, sees the contents of time. It sees events as distinct and separated as objects in space. The past and the future are a present whole to the spiritual view. What is mental and subjective to the natural man is concrete and objective to the spiritual man. The habit of seeing only that which our senses permit renders us totally blind to what otherwise we could see. To cultivate the faculty of seeing the invisible, we should often deliberately disentangle our minds from the evidence of the senses and focus our attention on an invisible state, mentally feeling it and sensing it until it has all the distinctness of reality. Earnest, concentrated thought focused in a particular direction shuts out other sensations and causes them to disappear. We have but to concentrate on the state desired in order to see it. The habit of withdrawing attention from the region of sensation and concentrating it on the invisible develops our spiritual outlook and enables us to penetrate beyond the world of senses and to see that which is invisible. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen. Romans chapter 1 and verse 20. This vision is completely independent of the natural faculties. Open it up and quicken it. Without it, these instructions are useless, for the things of the Spirit are spiritually discerned. A little practice will convince us that we can, by controlling our imagination, reshape our future in harmony with our desires. Desire is the mainspring of action. We could not move a single finger unless we had a desire to move it. No matter what we do, we follow the desire which at the moment dominates our minds. And when we break a habit, our desire to break it is greater than our desire to continue in the habit. The desire which impels us to action are those that hold our attention. A desire is but an awareness of something we lack or need to make our life more enjoyable. Desires always have some personal gain in view. The greater the anticipated gain, the more intense is the desire. There is no absolutely unselfish desire. Where there is nothing to gain, there is no desire, and consequently, no action. The spiritual man speaks to the natural man through the language of desire. The key to progress in life and to the fulfillment of dreams lies in ready obedience to its voice. Unhesitating obedience to its voice is an immediate assumption of the wish fulfilled. To desire is a state. To desire a state is to have it. As Pascal has said, "You would not have sought me had you already found me." Man, by assuming the feeling of his wish fulfilled, and then living and acting on this conviction alters the future in harmony with his assumption. Assumptions awaken what they affirm. As soon as man assumes the feeling of his wish fulfilled, his four-dimensional self finds ways for the attainment of this end, discovers methods for its realization. I know of no clearer definition of the means by which we realize our desires than to experience in imagination what we were to experience in the flesh were we to achieve our goal. The experience of the end wills the means. And with its larger outlook, the four-dimensional self then constructs the means necessary to realize the accepted end. The undisciplined mind finds it difficult to assume a state which is denied by the senses. Here is a technique that makes it easy to encounter events before they occur, to call things which are not seen as though they were. People have a habit of slighting the importance of simple things, but this simple formula for changing the future was discovered after years of searching and experimenting. The first step in changing the future is desire. That is, defining your objective. Know definitively what you want. Secondly, construct an event that you'd believe would encounter following the fulfillment of your desire, an event which implies fulfillment of your desire, and something that will have the action of self predominant. Thirdly, immobilize the physical body and induce a condition akin to sleep. Lie on a bed or relax in a chair and imagine that you are sleepy. And then with your eyelids closed and your attention focused on the action you intend to experience in imagination, mentally feel yourself right into the proposed action, imagining all the while that you are actually performing the action here and now. You must always participate in the imaginary action, not merely stand back and look on, but you must feel that you're actually performing the action so that the imaginary sensation is real to you. It's always important to remember that the proposed action must be one that follows the fulfillment of your desire. And also, you must feel yourself into the action until it has all the vividness and distinctness of reality. So for example, suppose you want a promotion in your office, on your job. Being congratulated would be an event that you would encounter following the fulfillment of your desire. Having selected this action as the one you're going to experience in imagination, immobilize your physical body and induce a state that is akin to sleep, essentially a drowsy state, a state in which you are attentive without any effort. Now, imagine that a friend is before you. Imagine they're standing right in front of you and put your imaginary hand into his, feel it to be solid and real, and then carry on an imaginary conversation with him in harmony with the action. Don't visualize yourself at a distance in point of space and at a distance in point of time being congratulated on your good fortune. Instead, make elsewhere here in the future now. Because the future event is a reality now in a dimensionally larger world. And oddly enough, now in a dimensionally larger world, that's equivalent to here in the ordinary three-dimensional space of everyday life. The difference between feeling yourself in action here and now and visualizing yourself in action as though you were on a motion picture screen is the difference between success and failure. The difference will be appreciated if you will now visualize yourself climbing a ladder. And then with your eyelids closed, imagine that a ladder is right in front of you and you feel that you're actually climbing it. Desire, physical immobility bordering on sleep, an imaginary action in which self feelingly predominates here and now are not only important factors in altering the future, but they're essential conditions in consciously projecting the spiritual self. If when the physical body is immobilized, we become possessed of the idea to do something and imagine that we are doing it here and now and keep the imaginary action feelingly going right up until sleep ensues, we are likely to awaken out of the physical body to find ourselves in a dimensionally larger world with a dimensionally larger focus and actually doing what we desired and imagined we were doing in the flesh. But whether we awaken there or not, we are actually performing the action in the fourth dimensional world, and we will reenact it in the future here in the third dimensional world. Now, this chapter is pretty long, and if I finished it, it would probably take me another 10 minutes because it's very long. And so if you have not bought this book, I highly encourage it. It is called The Power of Imagination, The Neville Goddard Treasury, His Greatest Visionary Writings in One Collection by Neville. You can get it on Amazon. I'm not getting paid to say that. This is one of the greatest collections of Neville's work I've ever seen. I highly encourage you to check it out. So, you know, what I love about this chapter is that it's describing the true nature of how events unfold in the physical world, right? And being in this physical world, being so imbibed and integrated and an experience and so full of vividness, oftentimes, especially around times of death and destruction and chaos, it can be hard to not identify with who we really are, which is the life that is giving life to the body that we are walking around in, right? When we are going through life and there's financial problems and relationship problems, oftentimes we get lost in the illusion of our individuality. It can be easy because it's so habitual for so many of us. And what this chapter is really doing a great job in expressing is how the truth behind the nature of reality is literally as fluid as the being, as the I am that you are. There is no sense of permanence to the physical world, It's all going to die, and it's all always changing. And this isn't metaphorical stuff. This is physics, that nothing is ever still. Everything moves. Everything vibrates. Everything, literally, every single particle. And, you know, I think this is something that I just love talking about and thinking about. You know, I want you to think about even the phone that you're listening to this podcast on, or the computer, or the device that you're listening to it on. You can look at this thing and realize that it is billions and billions of molecules of protons and electrons and all different types of atoms vibrating at ridiculously fast speeds, so fast of speeds that it's perceived as solid by your senses. And this is the tragedy for those who cannot seem to affect our reality, is that we are addicted to the information that our senses are telling us. And it is super important that we can begin to detach from the... So here's the balance. Because a lot of people in this new age movement have this thing like good vibes only, right? I freaking hate that. I hate that because it's so almost narcissistic and in denial of the true nature of reality, right? Just because you don't like quote-unquote bad things doesn't mean they don't exist. However much it is the labeling of them that makes them bad, it does not change that things that destroy make life, and things that make life also destroy. There is a daytime and there is a nighttime. There always is. But the struggle that humanity has been in is believing that good and evil, that life and death, that black and white are opposed, that are at odds, that are at enmity with each other. But this is simply a perceptual understanding, because when we step back into this fourth dimensional world where we see time as a container of events that can be plucked out like rocks out of a bowl, right? Events can be plucked out and they can be enhanced. But it's so hard for us to grasp this when we're walking through life seemingly believing that the events are happening, not in a deterministic, you know, sequence, that everything is random and that there's no order to the universe, and that we essentially have no way to affect that, because it's just the way it is. Good is good, bad is bad, evil good, you know, all that stuff. And you know, I don't think I can stress enough how important it is to be able to detach from situations that are not feeding. Let me say that again. Detaching from situations that you're not allowing yourself to be fed that which is in alignment with where you want to be in your life. It's really important that you don't suppress your negative emotions. And that's the problem that I have with the New Age movement, is that a lot of times it talks about detachment, you know, when the detachment is really suppression. Because the truth is, these repeated events that we don't like coming into our lives, which is the whole reason we're learning to refocus our attention and really discipline our mental activity and imagination, the reason they're happening is not because some red dude with horns said, ha ha ha, this dude's a piece of shit, I'm gonna make him suffer. No, it's because we are infinite. And because we are infinitely made in an individual form for a short while, just because we are individuals does not mean we do not possess the power of the infinite. And this is where dualism begins to feed ideas of separation, because if we're all separate, how can we have the same power? Right? And that's just not true. Who I am is who you are. And I'm not talking about my face or my hair, my shorts, my pants, my shirt, my socks, not even my skin, not my bones, not even my organs, but all of that and so much more, because this identity as Michael Gustin is simply a reference meaning assigned so that the otherness, the individualness, can relate to itself. Because we are in a state of amnesia and do not know who we are naturally inclined to assign meaning to everything. And because everything has a different meaning, we begin to perceive it as separate. And because we have full permission, and we do apply certain meaning to our lives that is just so ridiculous sometimes, we have a really hard time seeing how events are played out and how we are actually affecting every single one of these events. Man's assumptions that he regards as insignificant produce effects that are considerable. And because of this, man should revise his estimate of an assumption and recognize its creative power. Because realistically, every assumption, if it's persisted in, if you continue to believe, if you're just self-persuaded, like, yeah, this is just the way it is. If you notice, you're never really surprised about the way it is. You're never surprised about the way it is because that's just the way it is for you, for me. And those are assumptions. And those assumptions are direct byproducts or form reflecting my self-image, what I believe about myself. And this is the really amazing thing, is that you can literally believe whatever the frick you want to believe about yourself. And persist in that assumption. If you truly persist in it, and I'm not talking about becoming a freaking tiger. You know, I'm not talking about, you know, becoming a unicorn or some bullshit like that. I'm talking about real change right here. If you want to change your relationships, if you want to change your career, if you want to change your job or your life, you have to change your concept of yourself. You're not a shitty person. You don't suck. You're amazing. You're lovely. You're powerful. You're wonderful. You do not lack anything because the kingdom is inside of you. So if we can begin to enter into the space where we refuse to accept the ideology of duality and separation and embrace this concept, become slowly more self-persuaded of the truth that we are God, we are God, we are consciousness, we are Allah, we are whatever name you want to put on it, you are that. That's who you really are. And this skin suit, this body, it's simply an avatar. It's simply a character in a video game. And the really good thing about this video game is that you created it. And because you created it, you can create more. You can affect the way the game is played. Because the real laws of life lie in our attitudes, in our daily attitudes. People want to go to work every single day and say, oh, you know, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And I'm not this. And success is for the chanceful. And, you know, and if you work really hard, you may get it, but I'm not, that's not me. And, you know, success is for lucky people, as if luck is some, you know, just dove that randomly decides to land on somebody's shoulder. Spoiler alert, it's not. Until, you know, because this is something I had to do. I had to get over what all these people had told me about what life is. And I had to discover it for myself, only to discover that life is literally what I make it. If I become so self-persuaded, and some may call that deluded, if I become so self-persuaded that I am right now what I want to be, I will, through a series of events, become that in this physical world, because the physical world is a shadow of things already imagined. Everything that is in this physical world was once imagined. That's the way it works. It's kind of like a conveyor belt. These big factories, and there's a conveyor belt, and You know, there's a long pipe that sends some package or item down, and the item lands on the conveyor belt and it just goes in a line of items. That's kind of how this works here. Except those items are events. And that conveyor belt is the perceived linear process of time and space from the point of your experience as a human. Categories. So what determines what events, what items go down the pipe and onto the conveyor belt into your experience? What determines that? Is it Santa Claus? Is it praying to some deity that you think you believe in, but you don't really know, but you just use it because it's secure? What is it? What allows us to bring events into our life? And the reason I'm so passionate about this is because I'm always testing it. I'm always testing this. I am doing everything I can to poke through this worldview. Because if it's not true, I don't want nothing to do with it. I want to know the truth about life, about reality, about the universe, about who I am. And this is why the ancients said, know yourself and you will know the universe and the gods. Because once you know yourself, you know everything else, because you are everything temporarily existing as a human. You're infinite. When are you going to let your separation ideologies go? When are you going to let every limiting belief fall to the wayside? When are we going to finally commit to proving the truth of the words that are coming out of my mouth? Because that's the thing, either this is true or it's not. Even when we come to the truth is legitimately subjective in nature. Because every time, you know, you look at two people are sitting down at a sunset, they're seeing the same exact sun, they're seeing the same exact geography, they're seeing the same exact, you know, shadows, they're seeing the same exact skyline, it's the same one, but it's completely different. And both of them will say that. They'll say two completely different things because we never speak objectively. We speak from the lens of the contents of our own consciousness. And this is so offensive to so many people who are addicted to their senses, to victimhood, to being powered over by others, and, you know, people who need attention. And don't get me wrong, I was once one of them until I realized this. We are never going to see the world in any other way than what is already inside of ourselves. We're never going to see anything in the world that we don't see in ourselves. Everything that we see in the world and the lens that we place over it, it's inside of us, because we cannot see anything other than what we are. Ryan, I'm sure you've heard the phrase, the minute you begin to act like life is a blessing, it becomes one. Because the minute you become self-persuaded that you are blessed, that everything is always working out for you, and even in your chaos, you are admitting this and acknowledging this and believing it wholeheartedly, you will find that everything is always working out for you, and events are happening in ways that your logic could not explain. And that's the whole thing about logic. We want to say, well, how is that true? You know, logically, this means this. And I say, well, where do you get your logic from? Right? There's no freaking handbook saying this is what logic is. This is how things should happen. Newsflash, life is always in a state of change. You're never going to nail it. You're only going to adapt. Life doesn't get easier. You get better. You get better by changing your concept of yourself. The undisciplined mind finds it difficult to assume a state which is denied by the senses. The undisciplined mind. Why? Why does the undisciplined mind find it very hard to detach from what the senses are telling it? Why? Because the undisciplined mind is oftentimes a mind that has been shaped by the opinions of others, and namely those that believe stupid, shitty, crappy, limiting beliefs like, well, maybe you can be successful, but it's not not really, you know, it's not for most people, or, you know, somebody told me life sucks. You just got to figure out how to make it less sucky. Bullshit, dude. BS. Don't freaking project that limiting crap onto me, dude. I'll tell you right now, that's some BS. And you're never going to experience anything other than life sucks and you trying to make it a little less sucky until you refuse to give life to that anymore, until you refuse to say, F this, I'm going to freaking change my life, dude. And sometimes you got to get loud with it. You got to get passionate about it. You got to get strongly desirable about it, because it's not until we have a strong desire to change that we actually do it. So I'm asking you today, where's your desire to change? On a scale of 1 to 10. Because if you're not taking this stuff seriously, and that's totally okay, because again, these are all my opinions based on my experience. Well, that's fine. But if you really are sick and tired of staying stuck where you were and tired of experiencing the same relationships and the same jobs and the same BS over and over, then it is in your best interest, most definitely, to really, really, really test this stuff out. You know, oftentimes I use the technique in here that Neville talks about to set reminders for myself. I find that it almost works as good as my calendar, my notifications. It's not totally perfect yet, but you know, Neville talks about, you know, when you really want to change the future, it's a three-step process, and we have a toolkit that gives you many different ways to use this tool. We're actually coming out with an app that's going to provide you with meditations and exercises and worksheets and workbooks that will really help you apply Neville's teachings to your life in order to change them. You know, we've been able to help people in over 100 countries utilize these principles, and it's been such a blessing for sure. But this three-step process is the basis for all of these tools. And the first step in changing the future is desire. And it's defining your objective, knowing exactly what it is that you want. Not, I want $1 million, or not, I want a nice house, or not, I want a nice job. I'm talking about, I want to make $1 million every 12 months, which means $1 million divided by 12 is what? I'm not even going to try and do that right now. I don't have a calculator. So that means I'm going to make this much money every month, right? And I'm going to be doing this, and I'm going to be doing this in this way, this, this, and that, right? We want to get really clear. We want to quantify our desire. We want to see what it looks like. We want to get really vivid with it. Don't, you know, don't leave it up to half the script. Really define your objective, right? And secondly, it's important that you construct a scenario, a mental scenario that you believe that you're going to encounter following the fulfillment of your desire, right? An event which implies the desire has already been fulfilled, right? So let's just say I want a new job, right? I want a new job. The one I'm in sucks, you know, and I want a new job that gives me, let's just say, 3 more hours a day, right? And $5,000 more a month, right? So I enter, you know, I get this very clear, and I create a scene that would imply that this has already happened. And a great way to do this, at least in this context, would be to, if you have somebody that you really trust, that you love, that you really, you know, you take it to heart when they are either complimenting you or giving you feedback, you know, somebody you really are emotionally invested in, and create a scene with them where they're essentially sharing, you know, they're congratulating you on actually achieving this. So you want to make $5,000 more a month, and you want to work 3 less hours a day, right? So let's say you work 9 to 5 and you want to work 9 to 2 and you, Monday through Friday, right? Cool. That's fine. That's awesome. That's great. Let's do it. So what would be a scene that you would encounter following the fulfillment of this desire? Well, there's a couple different things you can do. And the way I like to do it most of the time is you don't need to go too far out. You really don't. But here's the thing, and this is how you can really begin to differentiate this. Right now, you can feel the difference between spring and winter, unless you live in a place where there's no seasons like I did growing up, Palm Springs, hot, right? But you can differentiate Valentine's Day from Christmas Day. You can differentiate Halloween from Easter, right? You can totally tap into the sensory vividness of what it's like on Halloween and what it's like on Easter, or what it's like on Valentine's Day, or what it's like on Christmas, right? So this is the object. The reason I share that with you is because this is how you can really, we want to make your present scenario feel like it's in the past. So right now you can remember what you did last summer. It legitimately feels like it's in the past. Well, this is the same feeling that we want to generate with this experience. And I know it may sound like cuckoo, but the truth is I do it all the time, and I find people telling me exactly what I wanted them to tell me. And it's just amazing. The more you do it, the more it works, right? So just because you become more and more and more aware, and your attention becomes more and more disciplined, your imagination becomes more and more controlled, you're no longer just giving all of your attention to the senses. You're not paying for worry or fear or faith. Worry, fear, lack, destruction, none of that stuff, right? So we create a scene. So let's just say it's your dad, your mom or your dad. And what are they going to say once you're making $5,000 more a month and you're working 3 less hours a week? Well, quite frankly, in the most simplest terms, they could say, hey, you know, congratulations, you know, on increasing your income $5,000 a month and working only until 2 o'clock. How amazing is that, right? But you can get more sensory with it. You can get more vivid with it. Keep in mind, I have 4 cats, so you probably hear them all throughout this podcast. But you can get vivid with it. So you can go up to them and you can be at a really nice dinner. You just took them out because you're making an extra $5,000 a month. You took them to Ruth's Chris or the Melting Pot, and they're sitting there across and they're beaming at you and they're saying, "Yo, congratulations. I'm really, really happy. We're really, really happy that you were able to decrease your work time and increase your income. I mean, it's so amazing. It's so awesome, right? Think of all the things you're able to do now. You're able to spend more time here, blah, 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 blah." The objective with this conversation is having it get very, very vivid. We want to feel that excitement, almost those butterflies, but not butterflies because it's not nervousness, but it's that excitement from deep in the solar plexus where you feel like, yeah, I'm just grateful it's done. It's here. It's like it's happened. Like it's now. That's what we want to tap into. And then we can go, the third step here is to go and simply into a theta brain state. So theta, which is what Neville calls a state akin to sleep, is the brain wave that is used in a lot of hypnosis therapies. Because what is going on here is the nervous system, the subconscious mind, is most open to conscious directive. It's most open to shifting. It's most open to impression. And when our prefrontal cortex is activated by the things that are going on in the world, it's impossible for our subconscious to do anything but operate what we've already programmed into it. And you can find this all over the internet if you feel the need to search. You know, theta, taking your brain down into theta is one of the most powerful things that you can do when it comes to releasing anxiety, stress, all that kind of stuff, because this brings you into touch with who you really are, which is I am, which is unconditional awareness, which is beingness. And so you get into the state, and you probably got into it multiple times during the day, maybe even today. If you were driving down the road and you found yourself just staring, that's theta. If you find yourself in a classroom and you find yourself just staring completely, you're not even conscious of what's going on, that's theta. And when you're in bed right before you're asleep and you're just there, but you're not conscious of anything going on, but you're still there, that's theta. And this is where the scene really needs to make its home. And it's not a one-time thing. You know, we read stories of Neville talking about his people that listen to his lectures go and do this. You know, even when I do it, it's not just a one-time thing. It's multiple times because, again, you are impressing upon your consciousness what you are, right? We're literally just creating a new set of events to unfold. And that's really the beauty here is, like, this is not something you need to learn that you've never been doing. You've always been doing this. Every single person on this planet has been using this law, whether unconsciously or not, since the day they came out of the womb, because everybody on this planet has the ability to some degree to focus their attention, to define their self-image, what they believe to be true about themselves, and ultimately create assumptions about the world based upon that self-image. And if you want a little more scientific background on this, I really encourage you to read the book Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz. Maxwell Maltz was a plastic surgeon who worked with many different types of people and saw primarily shifts in self-image after the plastic surgery was done, and saw the sequences of events in people's lives completely changed as a result of what they began to believe about themselves. It's really, really powerful stuff. And like I said, you've been doing this your whole life. You've been doing this your whole life. We really want to get vivid with these sessions when we're going into this state akin to sleep. Because when we can get vivid, we can get real. We can feel it to be real. And the cool thing about your subconscious mind is that it doesn't dictate, okay, this happened in the physical world of Earth and this happened in the non-physical world of imagination. No. It takes what is impressed upon it and it goes into the world and puts things into place that allows you to walk across them like a bridge of incidents, literally determining your future. Because again, your subconscious mind, what you really are is what everything else is. So when you're tapping into this, so really what we've got is 7 billion individuals that are the same life, God, using this law, co-creating with each other all over. Can you imagine how powerful that is? Imagine if every single person knew this and believed it to be true. Believed it to be true and knew this. And used it consciously. Imagine the type of world we would create. And like I said, if you're having a hard time believing this stuff, don't listen to me. Test it. Freaking test the hell out of it, dude. Don't just take me at my word. I don't want you to take me at my word because I'm not your freaking guru. You are your own guru. I'm not going to give you anything that you don't already have. Because you're everything. And you're amazing. And you're wonderful. And you're awesome. And your life. And your love. And your power. But you're also hate. And envy. And jealousy. And contempt. Because those, as the way we think of them, are just manifestations in the world. And as we know, every physical thing in this world was once imagined. And so from this day forward, you can choose to create your life. And it's not going to happen overnight. And I don't want you to think that's going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen overnight. I started this journey, really started it, man, almost 10 years ago. 10 years ago. And I've been near and far, you know, all across the country, all over the place, different states, cities, world, all that kind of stuff, really figuring out what's really going on here. What's really going on Earth? Is this just some random individualized speck in the middle of nothingness? Yeah, it is. Absolutely. And there's a shit ton more just like this. But just because there is a shit ton more of everything, of galaxies and planets and stars and rocks and cats and dogs and humanoids and reptilians and whatever the heck you want to define out there, just because there are more individuals, does that have to mean that we are all separate from each other? Because again, remember, pulling out of this third dimensional view of time and space, there is no separation. Everything is one, appearing as many. It's something that we will discover and use and utilize for the rest of our lives. But if you stay committed, if you really seek to destroy everything in you that isn't in alignment with who you want to be, and you constantly enter into that state of your desire being fulfilled, and you live in that joy, and you follow that bliss, and you're guided by that inspired action, I can guarantee you that life becomes one of the most amazing, miraculous experiences that you're just like, holy shit, man, this is just amazing. And it's not amazing because it's always good, because it always feels good. Embrace the things that cause you to strip away everything that isn't in alignment with who you really want to be. Embrace the contrast that pulls out of you the things that are not in alignment with what you want to be. Do it, and you will just really just become more aware of the fact that you're God having the adventure of a lifetime. Thanks, 2020. It's amazing. You're amazing. You're whole. You're perfect. You're loved. You're amazing. You're loved. You're wonderful. You are love itself. Abundant, prosperous, wealthy, healthy, wise, good, complete, needing nothing, whole, God. Don't ever forget it. Thanks for listening. I appreciate you. Appreciate the time you spend listening to this, investing in yourself. As always, if you have any questions, please feel free to send a voice message. Any comments, you know, if it's appropriate, I'd love to play it on the next episode. Thanks for being here with me. Thanks for sharing this time. I hope you have a great rest of your week. Wow. Rest of your week. And I'll talk to you soon.